Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Live, local, logical. It's Cardle and Woolley on Talk 1370. Join the conversation at 512-643-5483. Now, here are Cardle and Woolley.
Good morning, Jim Cardle. Good morning, Austin.
Good morning, Lynn Woolley.
This is a big news day, nationally and locally. Yes. We have got more than we can shake a stick at. You know what? I wake up this morning, and of course, I wake up at the crack of dark 30.
When the cock crows, yes, Willie's awake.
Turn on Fox News, Fox and Friends first.
Okay.
That's the show before Fox and Friends, which starts locally at 6 o'clock in the morning. So this is the early Fox and Friends. And they've got this guy on just before 5 o'clock. Maybe about 10 minutes until 5 this morning.
Yes.
Live from Austin, Texas.
Oh.
And he's a jewelry store owner. I did not get his name. I did not get a lot of the details, but I can
well,
tell
I
you.
Well, I know some jewelry store owners. I need you to find out who that was.
Well, I'll see if they post it.
We could have him on the show.
If they post the video, then we'll see.
But I'm sorry
we'll
to interrupt. Okay, you got me going.
You are not sorry to interrupt.
Keep going. What is it?
All right. So he was talking about all the times he's been broken into. And that he can't call 911 anymore because nobody's in danger, so he has to call 311. And he says, you know, you leave a message, you're lucky if you ever hear anything. And then
311 is for?
The police.
Non-emergency.
Non-emergency.
You get a psychological counselor, maybe, or...
You don't get much of anybody, according to him.
Well, then, if you got a bullet coming at you and somebody's breaking into your place... 311 doesn't seem like it's going to work very well.
But. Well, that was the entire point
of
the interview.
Ah.
And the fact that Austin police have been defunded and they made a big deal of it. And so we continue to get more negative coverage.
You mean compared to 87,000 more IRS agents? Yes.
Yeah. Did you see that's your line. I need to let you keep that line.
Well,
all right. There's a story out this morning. I'll use it that way.
Yes, sir.
Keller Schools, which is a weaselly school district. It seems like Fort Worth is burdened with the worst school districts in the state with regard to wokeness. I don't know how their teaching is, but with regard to wokeness, they are.
What do you got against Keller?
They're left wing to the max.
Okay.
I've done stories about them, written columns on WB Daily about the Keller School District.
Okay.
But now there's the weirdest article I've ever seen. It's in the Jerusalem Post. Now, the Jerusalem Post, it started off as a left wing rag back in, I think, the 30s or something. It's been sold a couple of times. It moved to the right, then it moved to the center. It's supposed to be back on the right again, but this particular article is written specifically from a left-wing point of view. This could have been a Texas Tribune story. It's so left.
Okay.
And they're talking about parents, and they're constantly referring to them as right-wing parents in here.
Brother.
And somebody wanted the Bible removed, but the new one is that they wanted to remove the Diary of Anne Frank. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. There is no right-winger that would want to remove the Diary of Anne Frank.
I'm kind of with you, but...
This is why you read the stories.
Yes.
So you go into this and you realize that this is not the diary of Anne Frank as Anne Frank wrote it. This is an illustrated adaptation of the diary of Anne Frank. And apparently it has all kind of sexual material in it. It has pictures of stuff that are unmentionable on the air in the morning. So yeah, maybe the go back to the real diary of Anne Frank and maybe leave this one out. I just get back to it time after time and after time that people need to have some common sense and know what is appropriate for first graders and sixth graders and 12th graders and so on and so forth. And by the time you get to college, whatever they want to put on the school, the libraries and colleges is fine with me. I think people in their late teens and early 20s have the ability to discern this stuff. But these little kids don't need to be inundated with all this sexual material, which is what this is.
Of course not. And you know, Lynn, I'm not going to be surprised, and I'm going to start talking about it. I think the school teachers of America who were learning this week, there's 300,000 teacher shortages across the nation. I think teachers are going to be a big voting block moving to the Republican Party. But what you're saying is that somebody has gone and rewritten Anne Frank's diary. That means they're changing history.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen it. What I'm saying is it's an illustrated adaption, and apparently the illustrations are a little overly graphic. And I didn't realize that Anne wrote about all that sex. So I don't know. They also mention in this story that the Keller District was the subject of a 2021 investigation by the Texas Education Agency, during which, and they make a point to say, Republican Governor Greg Abbott alleged the district was making sexually explicit books available to children. I don't think that's an alleging. I think that's correct from what I have read.
Well, as the old saying in the Cardle and Woolley show goes, government goes to those who show up, folks. We got to be paying attention in our classroom. Kids are going back to school this week all across the state of Texas in the next couple weeks across the nation. This is something else, Lynn.
Another story. We just got a minute here. Let's talk about these 5 million foreign nationals.
Yep.
You asked me about the Center Square.
Yes.
I've always thought it was a trustworthy place.
Uh-huh.
So when they say that there's nearly 5 million foreign nationals have entered the U.S. illegally, read the fine print.
They're talking about sources inside the Customs and Border Patrol, which came out with some new numbers. I've been following Fox News's Bill Malugin. Boy, we've got some Facebook and Twitter posts up on Texas Insider. They caught some illegal immigrants being locked out of the country by Texas National Guard. And once the padlock was actually put on the fence, around came some of the federales from the United States, and they let them in. So they say it's 2 million, according to Fox News sources, but then the Fox News source and this Center Square news source is both the Customs and Border Patrol. There's clearly more than you can count coming across the border, is my point. This is a big, huge problem, and it's getting worse. And it happens to correspond with what, Lynn Woolley? Joe Biden, 17 months in office.
I mean, he's the guy that opened the border.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's kind of a non sequitur.
Mm-hmm.
This includes 3.9 million who have been apprehended entering the U.S. illegally nationwide.
Yes.
That's every way that people can get in.
That's not a bad way to count.
Some people use their passports illegally or overstay their visas or whatever. 3.4 million at the southern border.
Yep.
How does that jibe with Malugin?
3.4, according to this number, 2 million, according to Customs and Border Patrol on the southern border. And that's in a new record, breaks last year's record. But last year's record was for all 12 months. This number they're quoting is just for 10 months. We got two more to go.
Mm-hmm. And, they're called what? Undocumented?
They're called,
So how do we know how many there are? If they're undocumented, that means by definition of the word that we're not sure. And if there's all these gotaways that they call them, mm-hmm. I don't think we know. I don't think we have a handle
on
this.
Not.
We're a country, a nation that has no clue how much our borders
Absolutely.
Are being violated.
And that brings up the reminder that the old 11 million figure that's been quoted for decades of the number of illegal immigrants in the United States, literally quoted for years, Dan Patrick in Princeton is the source that he quotes about a year ago. They came up with more like 24 to 30 million. So, again, you are precisely right.
All right, Austin City Council looks at more spending. Lake Travis ISD looks at more spending.
Did you see the
article?
We'll
have that coming up in just a moment. Yeah, I didn't see that. Talk 1370 is the right choice. Cardle and Woolley continues in a moment.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Keeping Austin logical. It's Cardle and Woolley on Talk 1370. Join the conversation, 512-643-5483.
Okay, do we have the cash register handy? Because we're going to talk about money. Austin said we have the cash register handy.
Casey Johns was born ready, Lynn Woolley.
Every time I hear that effect, I want to reach in and grab me some 20s, but it never happens. Austin City Council spent about 8 hours on the first day of the budget approval process, and they heard some public comments. It's interesting that we have so many so-called activists on the City Council.
Community organizers.
I guess they're community organizers. Well, mm-hmm. Chito is a community organizer, isn't he? Following in the steps of Gregorio Eduardo Casar.
Yes.
So Velo's a Casar. I think Fuentes is a Casar. Is Ann Kitchen a Casar?
Well, at any given moment, there's no telling who's going to step into that role.
Well, look who went to this.
They're all capable of it.
Look who went to the little kickoff rally for a so-called increased living wage for the city. Vanessa Fuentes, I look at some of the things Vanessa Fuentes says, and I just go, why? Mm-hmm. Why is she on the council? Then there's Chito and Ann Kitchen, along with some workers and labor groups, kicked off their day at a rally for increased living wage for the city. And, of course, they want to go to 20. Kroc has included an $18 minimum wage and a one-time $1,500 stipend in his budget.
Yep.
That would cost the city $3.7 million. The $20 rate would require $8.3 million. And $14.5 million in outgoing funds. I ask you, Jim Cardle, what exactly are we talking about here in five words or less?
We're talking about money that I think a lot of Austinites would rather see go to police so that our streets are safe than increasing pay for government bureaucrats.
All right, I can't do it in seven words either.
Yeah.
Here's what I wrote down
yes, sir.
I read this.
Uh-huh.
Anytime government raises wages for its workers, that is a transfer of wealth from those in the private sector who cannot force raises for themselves.
True.
Now, I guess unions go out and negotiate in the private sector.
And that's on the rise across the country,
but
by
if
the
you're
way.
Working for a non-organized company, and I don't care much for
Texas,
unions. Yeah. I don't much like them myself because I think they ask for idiotic things and I think they cause prices to go up for consumers. But you can't rally out in front of your place of business demanding more money. And besides, when the private sector pays more money, the private sector has to find a way to pay for it. And the way they do that is they raise their prices to consumers for their products or services.
Uh-huh.
The way government raises the money is they'll just tax us more. So what Fuentes is really saying, and Chito and Ann and all these workers, is that we're going to have to find a way to confiscate more money from the people who are out there working in the private sector, like Cardle and Woolley.
Yes.
And most people. And we're going to transfer that over to the public sector.
Now, that being said, you and I did have a conversation yesterday. With this economy in Austin, we don't realize how lucky we are. There are plenty of places around the country where wages and the economy is not going forward. It's going sideways or backwards. We do have to be competitive and recognize that there are plenty of places in the private sector for those potential employees that would be qualified and competent to run our city. So there's a little bit of the competitive dynamic going on here, I think. However, you're right, as we're looking at a number of areas where people across the nation believe the city of Austin is a little bit off the rails, we maybe ought to be doing a better job of prioritizing here.
All right, about 6:30 last night, the council adjourned the open portion of the meeting to do something that I just...
Did they go into executive session, is what you're saying?
That is a session that excludes the public.
Yes.
And who's going to fund these raises?
Whoever gets...
The people that were excluded from the meeting.
That's right.
Now, what are the three items, Jim Cardle, that they can use to justify a closed-door meeting?
Personnel matters.
Personnel, that's one.
Lawsuits.
Lawsuits and legal matters, that's two.
And give me the third.
Wait a minute, what did we already say? Legal matters, personnel, and financial stuff, isn't it?
Okay, I would suspect that's right.
So doing something like this, well, real estate matters, typically. And you can kind of understand that. I mean, if the city's looking
contracts.
At a lot and they want to build a new city hall on it, they don't want that to get out because then people that would cause the price to go up.
Yeah, and we'd know exactly where they're buying their homeless hotels.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens on that. And look, I'm not for the city. I'm not against the city workers making a living wage, but I think this is really a bad time to be doing things that are of an inflationary nature.
Well,
and what's an inflationary nature?
When we're in a recession,
spending money.
You're darn
like
right.
$703 million for the Lake Travis ISD, and it's going to decimate the football program. So, Jim, you are out in the
Lake Travis area.
Well, you're in the affluent suburbs. So your house was just appraised, and you are now a multi millionaire
based on
your house appraisal. Okay, I'm going to ask you the question
not
directly.
True, but
but I know what your house appraised at. I'm not going to announce it. But based on your house appraisal, how do you feel about a $703 million bond issue on the Lake Travis ISD, assuming you were living in that ISD?
I know that in that part of the city, and we're going to start seeing it up in the Taylor and the northeast part of town as well, there's tremendous. And I'm talking that for people who haven't been out Highway 71 on the way to Marble Falls, you would, in the last year or two, you would be absolutely floored at the number of hundreds upon hundreds of homes out there.
Does this mean that you think the $703 million bond issue ought to pass?
That leads to more students. That leads to more need for schools. And I would tend to be inclined I don't know about the exact 703 number, but I darn sure know they got a need for more schools.
All right, new high school at Lake Travis would run $236 million and some change.
That's a lot of high school right there, and they got a pretty nice one already, if
I remember correctly. Do they get their own football stadium? This is what inquiring minds want to know.
And two new elementary schools. Mm, yep. They've been adding them out there.
All right, well, the Mar-a-Lago raid is coming up, and this is, I think, the national story today. This hearing on Mar-a-Lago, will have it when we come back.
Will they or won't they?
Talk 1370, the right choice.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
It's Dana Lash. Coming up at 11 a.m., it's The Dana Show. Now back to Cardle and Woolley on Talk 1370.
And we're joined by Mackenzie Kelly, Austin City Council, District 6. Of course, the Austin City Council spent about 8 hours on the first day of the budget approval process, and it all kicked off with a rally for an increased living wage for the city. And Mackenzie, I'm curious to know, did you go to the rally?
I walked as far away from that rally as I could. Thanks for asking, though.
Well, I mean, the question does arise, and we noticed your name was absent from the list of people that attended, but it does bring up the question, if we come up with part of this, what Spencer Kroc wants, it would cost about $3.7 million, and if we go to the entire 20, we're told that that would be more like $8.3 million. Do we have the money?
Well, look, don't get me wrong. Our city staff works really hard. They do amazing and incredible work every single day, and we need to raise their wages to the point that we can afford it. And that's one of the things that I really needed to analyze before I could back something like that. I know that Councilmember Fuentes has been trying very hard to push for up to $22 per hour as a starting wage for these employees. I think 18 is a great compromise to get there now. There are very little employees at the City of Austin that don't make $18 per hour already. And when you look at things as a whole, we have to be competitive at the city, but not so competitive that we drive the cost of living up too high for small businesses, because we want people in the community to still be able to have employees and make a living as well.
Well, that's all true. When you do raise those wages, though, you have to have some source for the money. Will this require any kind of a tax increase?
Well, it wouldn't require right now. The proposal does not require any tax increase, but it does not afford the city council to maybe fund some of their pet projects and some of their resolutions and initiatives. And that is why it's a it's going to be a tough decision today. Do we go all the way up to $20 per hour, or do we stay at the 18 and give the 4% across the board pay increase to our employees?
Well, I know that Jim is bubbling over there with questions, so I'm just going to ask one more. And,
all right.
And this is a tough question. And, you know, you don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but I'm just thinking we have big shortages in the police department. Are there any parts of the city, any offices of the city, McKenzie, that you think we could do without so that we could save some money to pay the people that are essential?
Have you ever been to CVS and you get that really long receipt? I have a long list of things that we could probably cut at the city, including some of the homeless industrial complex that we continue to fund from a social services level. There's a lot of issues that I think that the public sector needs to step in and really help from a nonprofit standpoint and stop leaning so heavily on the city.
Yeah,
that would be my top item.
Yeah, that's a great analogy right there, McKenzie, that CVS receipt. I get those during every time, and they're trying to get you to buy things that you don't necessarily have on your list, but they sure would love to have you use that coupon, and they give you a week to do it because they never want to let the urgency go by. Lynn, you kind of took my question away because, you know, granted, we're not talking about billions of dollars here in your overall $5 billion budget. You're talking about $3.7 million or $8.3 to $14 million. I don't know that millions of dollars really get the citizens' interest anymore. But for heaven's sakes, we're still down hundreds of police officers on the street. I would think a lot of citizens are wondering why, and all of a sudden you can have a city council pay increase or staff increase, but still no police. We've gotten away from the focus on the defunding the police. It's still alive and well.
Yeah, it is. It is alive and well, and that's why in this budget I brought forward direction to the city manager to do two modified or transitional officer programs. Now, last year, I did this for one program as long as the funding was available. And the way that APD was able to do it is, so a typical cadet class lasts about 8 months. And that's because we take regular everyday people off the street who qualify to be a police officer. There are very high standards. And we make them a basic peace officer in the state of Texas. It takes about 4 months. And then we take about 4 months of the academy and we train them on how to do things the way the city of Austin does it, what's unique about our city, that sort of thing. And throughout that process, we have attrition. We have officers or cadets who are not able to make the cut.
Yep.
They fail out. They're in poor physical shape. And so this program, the transitional officer program I'm bringing forward again this year, will allow us to backfill those positions. And as a result of that from last year, we have 8 officers with prior experience going through this program now. And we're going to get those 8 officers on the street a lot faster. And let me tell you, 8 may not seem like a lot, but where we're at right now with over 250 vacancies, 8 is better than 0.
Amen. There's no doubt about that. 250. And this story that we already covered about a jeweler up in North Austin talking about how he's got somebody on tape without a mask. They accidentally left a receipt with where they bought the tools done or used to do the crime. And he has to call not 911, but 311 because it's not a quote unquote urgent matter. I think there's a real increasing cry out there amongst the citizens, although it's like it's the silent majority. Crime's a problem in this community.
Crime is a problem. Let me tell you two quick stories. One, my staffer was assaulted at 3rd and Lavaca waiting at the bus stop.
What?
They got a picture of him on video, the person who did this to my staffer. They still haven't solved that crime. But when it happened, we called 911, and it took 28 minutes for officers to arrive because they got sent to higher priority calls than someone who was on city staff being assaulted. The second story, somebody in my district had their vehicle stolen from their driveway, had a Ring doorbell camera and a camera outside to show who did it, and it took officers 3.5 hours to get there. Look, this isn't our officers' fault. This is the unintended consequences
yep.
of what happened in 2020 when our city council so unthoughtfully defunded our police department, cut the budget by $150 million, and took away 150 positions and stopped the police academies. And so we are still recovering from that. And that's going to happen for the next 5 to 10 years until we can get our vacancies filled and our police department restaffed.
Mackenzie, I'm interested in the closed door session. And I know you can't talk about what happened in it because it's protected. But I'm just curious as what the reason was given. Was it a personnel matter?
For which executive session? We talked about four different items.
Oh, okay. It says around the story in community impact is talking about 6:30. The council adjourn the open portion of the meeting and hold a closed door session. I just always like to know in my mind that those were justified and not breaking any open meetings laws.
I mean, I can tell you generally when we go into executive session, we are always talking about the legal ramifications of what we do. And what one of my favorite things about executive session is that I'm able to gauge the other council members and where they're at based on the legality behind the actions that we take. Again, like you said, I can't talk about what we talk about in executive session, but it is nice to get the city's legal perspective and find out sometimes what the liability on the city is for the items that we pass.
All right, folks, we're visiting with City Councilwoman Mackenzie Kelly. Be sure to follow her on Twitter, where she does a nice job of keeping us up to date. I got to ask you an exit question here, because I bet a lot of Austinite and listeners are thinking, okay, executive sessions, legal matters. That reminds me of some homeless hotels that happen to be up in your district and also in Williamson County, who ain't happy about it. Give us an update on the homeless hotel situation with Williamson County, if you would.
So I went with Commissioner Terry Cook from Williamson County. She's a Democrat. I invited her out to visit a permanent supportive housing location where they do house individuals who are chronically homeless. It's managed by the same company or a nonprofit that's going to manage the hotel up in my district. And so it was a good experience to see how another one works, right? What their vision is, what mm-hmm. they expect to have happen. But we are still under a lawsuit from Williamson County, and that's going to have to play out in court. I don't have any updates for that at this moment, but I know it's hot and heavy on everybody's minds about this council member pay raise, and I just want to let you all know that if it were up to me and I could get favor on the council for this, I would put it on the ballot in November to see if council members deserve a pay raise or not.
Ooh, that would be interesting. Another day, another long day. It's like the old song from Les Miserables, the Broadway play. One more day. I'm sure you feel like it's Groundhog Day and you're going to get after it here and appreciate your help on being a fiscal watchdog for us taxpayers.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I hope you guys have a great day and maybe we'll talk again tomorrow.
All right, let's do it. Mackenzie Kelly, Austin City Council, wow. District 6. And we'll be right back. Talk 1370. It's the right choice.
Just two rejected applicants for the Biden Ministry of Truth.
We choose truth over facts.
Cardle and Woolley on Talk 1370.
Sound off on the day's top stories. 512-643-5483.
Well, I think the big story in Austin, of course, with the city council at least, is the budget. Whether the city council gets raises, whether the city employees get their minimum wage and all that kind of stuff. But you and I were just talking about.
Yes.
I don't get to vote on my salary.
You don't.
No, I have to get down on bended knee and beg. Okay. So when Mackenzie Kelly just said, let's put it on the ballot.
That
she's
kind
saying
of is a good way. Your point is well taken.
Well, she's saying that the people who pay us then get to decide if we're earning our money. Now,
well, and why don't we be able to vote for a pay cut? For heaven's sakes, I like your thinking.
Well, because
there.
You got to get the council to put it on the ballot.
Well, let's have a petition started for that.
It could happen. But let me say this. I think Mackenzie Kelly deserves a raise.
Absolutely.
I think she's done a great job.
Yep.
I think Vanessa Fuentes deserves a pay cut.
Absolutely.
So should they all make the exact same thing, or should it be based on how well they have done in their jobs?
Oh, based on merit, perhaps?
And who decides?
The
because
voters.
If the city of Austin decides as a whole, Mackenzie will get a pay cut and Fuentes will get a pay raise.
That's true. Given
but in my opinion, Fuentes is I mean, this whole airport thing in her where she doesn't want to disturb, what, a dozen houses or something like mm-hmm. that. And if you use the airport, and I use it reasonably regular, not as much as, you know, a lot of people's jobs have them flying every week. But I fly a few times. I have people that fly in and out. I go pick up.
Yes.
And take back to the airport. And it's a disaster sometimes. It's a zoo.
Absolutely.
Because it's just so crowded, and we need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I mean, the whole issue of city council pay for what in some towns, in smaller towns, certainly not Dallas or Houston, but in smaller towns, that's a volunteer job to begin with.
Yes, great point.
All right, let's see what's on Stephen's mind this morning. Stephen, hi there.
Good morning, fellas.
Morning,
well,
sir.
I heard this week where Rochelle Walensky was making an unapologetic apology for all of the misinformation and lack of science that the CDC and the NIH and the FDA have been pushing over all this COVID stuff.
So you don't think she deserves a raise right now?
She certainly does not deserve a raise. They have maliciously and intentionally defied the science. They've repeatedly had these votes that come up where they're trying to approve the next vaccine for the younger and younger group because they want to get it to where it is approved for the children to fully activate the redirection of liability from the corporations that have been given indemnification completely onto the taxpayers for all the harms.
All right, but let me jump in. We don't have but a couple of minutes here. If Dr. Rochelle Walensky is going to come public and say our performance did not reliably meet expectations, shouldn't that have been accompanied with her resignation?
I think indictment would be more appropriate.
Well, maybe so, but because look, I've written columns, how to fail and get rich. Do you know how to fail and get rich? Be a school superintendent.
Do something wrong in the government and be promoted up?
No, No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, essentially, this column was about school superintendents. If they fail and they get fired, they get handed humongous checks.
A lot of government employees have that situation, yes.
Well, they do. I'm sure city managers have it and all mm-hmm. that. But, mm-hmm. no, I mean, there's a certain There's a certain metric that certain people should make in any job you do. And if you don't meet some kind of minimum standards, you would think that you would just slink off into the night. But nope. She's got a new public health action-oriented culture working now. She knows everything that was wrong, and now she's going to fix it.
She's on the payroll of Big Pharma. They have pushed these vaccines.
Wait. That's a charge. Can you prove that?
The vaccines have been determined statistically, irrefutably, that they are more dangerous than
Well, I understand that, but you just made a charge that she's on the payroll of Big Pharma?
Yes. All three of those agencies, FDA, NIH, and CDC,
they've given her money.
Receive large money directly from Big Pharma.
All right.
That is how they are funded. The majority of their budget comes from money which is extracted from pharma. So they're not ever going to bite the hand that feeds them. When they got a new drug up for approval, by golly, it's going to be approved because the money would stop if they don't.
All right. I can see something Lynn Woolley's going to look into overnight. On that one.
I'm not disputing him. I'm just asking for the facts. Talk 1370 is the right choice.
Live, local, logical. It's Cardle and Woolley on Talk 1370. Join the conversation at 512-643-5483. Now, here are Cardle and Woolley.
Can I make a shameless promotion?
Absolutely.
I am excited. We have got, coming up at 8:35, Justin Dyer is going to join us, and he's the head of the UT Civitas Institute, and I'm very excited not only for us having him on the air, but for UT doing something like this. This is such a major step, and it's so significant. And we'll flesh it out a little bit and get some of his thoughts on current politics and all kinds of things.
He's got some great perspective, truly.
We've met him, and he's a great guy. And he'll be here at 8:35, and I can't wait to talk with Justin Dyer. Be sure that you are here, because you don't want to miss that.
Yep.
All right. Now, Jim, you mentioned this a moment ago, but the big story today is the possible unsealing of the affidavit for Mar-a-Lago and the raid, and the government thinks it'll jeopardize their investigation. So I'm going to ask you something. I'm going to ask you something very specific.
Okay. Fire away.
In this raid and the subsequent investigation that they don't want to affect negatively here, what is the government's goal? What are they trying to do?
Well, right now, as it pertains to today, it appears the Justice Department and the Merrick Garland's, they're trying to apparently cover it up because they are coming up with excuses why it shouldn't be done. I'll tell you exactly what they're trying to do. I've used the phrase concentric circles, whether it was Russia, or now the January 6th hearing, or the IRS court filings up in the state of New York. They are trying to close in and execute a kill shot on Donald Trump. They do not like the fact that he has Americans paying attention to the remaking of America, paying attention to why inflation is going up, because we're spending too much money and the government's attack on the oil and gas industry and a lot of other things is not what's the ingredient for making a strong country. They are seeing their lives flash before their eyes. We could be seeing the end of the Democrat Party if they're not careful here in November. They want to stop their bleeding, and yet everything they're doing is actually opening up the wound further.
You mentioned January 6th. I think you're on target there. I think this whole Mar-a-Lago thing is a continuation of the January 6th deal. You know, Liz Cheney is now dedicating her life. Bless her heart. She's going to be a volunteer. She's going to be the nation's first full-time I hate Trump person to get him from ever being in office or ever claiming humanity again.
That's the number one tactic to win this November election. Yes.
All right, let's go back to the Morning Joe.
Okay.
This is one of your favorite people in the world is Joe Scarborough.
No,
watch him constantly and kneel in front of him.
Well, I just like to see what the opposition's saying.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
All right, well, the Morning Joe says Trump might be innocent, but he's a liar, and you'd better not believe anything he says. Now, I play this two clips of the Morning Joe here. I want you to hear the left's hatred of Donald Trump on display.
If Donald Trump is innocent, and that's what we presume him to be in America, if he is innocent, then very good. We move forward. And I think there'll be some pretty harsh recriminations in the Justice Department and at the FBI for a raid on an ex-president's home. If he's not innocent, if he's proven to be guilty, well, no man's above the law.
That is,
and so, you know, just call balls and strikes. That's all we want of the Justice Department. And right now, despite all the lies, and I've got to say, if you're out there and you believe those lies, right, even after they've been disproven, you're stupid. And you may want to call somebody, try to get in touch with a professional and see if you can be deprogrammed from the cult that you're now in.
I don't say that with any...
Any malice.
Okay, that's Mika there in the background. And then Joe goes on about lying, but never mentions Biden, Karine, Pelosi, Schiff, Swalwell, you name it.
I just say, if you believe the lies that you've been told over the past week and a half, lies that have quickly been disproven by Donald Trump's next lie, you see, because lie number two undercuts lie number one. Lie number three undercuts lie number two. It just keeps going the way. And I'm just saying, as a friend of yours, and I hope you consider yourself to be my friend, that you need to be deprogrammed from that cult you're in, and you need to be able to start looking at facts again.
You think maybe Joe Scarborough, after he left... I'm trying to think. Has he always been at MSNBC? I was thinking he was somewhere. Maybe he's always been at MSNBC. But he had a night show. I remember being in a hotel room in Chicago and watching him and thinking, well, this is a great guy. mean, this guy is really good.
He ought to look in the mirror, Lynn. He's talking about a group of people being part of a cult. You talk about a
MSNBC
cult.
MSNBC is a cult. How about MSNBC?
And he says, if we believe in the equal justice of the law, are you kidding me? The thing is that they have no credibility. The Democrats have no credibility, and Americans know it. That is the problem. You can only cry wolf so many times before you're not going to be believed anymore, and that is precisely, number one, where we are today. And number two, if you're going to say something and address this subject like Joe Scarborough is, you might want to think about catching more flies with honey than vinegar, because he's just disgustingly insulting most every American in his line of
argument. All right, Michael
Cohen
was Donald Trump's fixer.
Uh-huh.
His lawyer.
Remember that name?
But Michael Cohen lost favor with Donald Trump, and so now Donald Trump is a persona non grata. So he goes on with Don Lemon at the Chicken Noodle Network, and Lemon tees up Cohen with some good old CNN accusations. And here's how that got started.
The president and his allies are really flooding the zone with different explanations for why so many top secret documents were found at Mar-a-Lago. Is this a Trump playbook? Overwhelm the story with distraction and deflection?
With Donald Trump, as I always call him, is Captain Chaos. It's to throw as much at the American public that he can in order to confuse them, because he truly believes that the American public has like a 2-day, maybe if you're bright, a 3-day window of remembering what was going on. So he'll just keep flooding it. But that's not why Donald Trump is doing it. You're right. He's scared. He's scared of the documents that they now have, you know, possession and control over, because this is documentary evidence. This is evidence that they can use against him.
And you know, CNN for years has been using this term. The walls are closing in on Donald Trump. We got him now. The walls are closing in on Trump. And here's Lemon going right back to the old CNN standard.
You say that with the walls closing in around him, his next move is to find a scapegoat.
Yes. I believe that
because you were a scapegoat.
Absolutely. And actually, it's something I talk about a lot in Revenge. I take you, it's a dissection from the beginning, the Steele dossier, all the way to the unconstitutional remand. And there's a lot that goes on in between. But I believe the next scapegoat is going to be Rudy Caludi Giuliani. I believe that, you know, everybody likes a bargain, but Donald Trump really likes a bargain. And I believe that Rudy is like a BOGO, buy one, get one half off. They're going to throw him under the bus for Mar-a-Lago, and at the same time, they're going to throw him under the bus for Georgia, for the district attorney Fannie Willis's case in Georgia. They're just going to keep pointing the finger. It's Rudy. Quite frankly, I had nothing to do with it.
Okay, with truth as a defense, BOGO is not buy one, get one half off.
Yeah.
Okay, that's Michael Cohen. Does sleaze just emanate from this guy, in your opinion? I mean, when you hear him, do you think, boy, this is an honest guy?
Well, you are making an excellent point. And I'll say kind of why I'm pausing here. I just still go back. Donald Trump and Michael Cohen are obnoxious New Yorkers. We ought to expect and fully understand that that's what we're going to get. But on the other hand, if you don't like mean tweets, you have to admit that the economy was better. Our nation was feared by our enemies. The American culture was being protected. That's what this is really about. It's a culture war, and the American left, whether it's Don Lemon and the mainstream media or others, they are afraid of the tens of millions of Americans that are coming back to the voting booth, particularly the women and the Hispanics, because they're fully aware of the gig being up, and Donald Trump's helped make that clear as the nose on our face.
Town Hall's Katie Pavlich was on Special Report with Brett Baier, and she's, you know, are we just sitting here waiting for Trump to be indicted? I mean, is that where we are in the country right now? And she says, meanwhile, the FBI is going to be leaking to the media. I want you to listen to this very carefully, because I think she's very correct in what she says, that while the FBI is saying, we don't want that judge, that magistrate, to open this up because it will damage our investigation, our Liz Cheney vendetta against Donald Trump. But there's stuff we do want out, and we'll just leak that. Here's how Pavlich puts it.
Well, the problem is that President Donald Trump has been trying to defend his innocence and has been painted as guilty by the FBI, the Department of Justice, and Democrats on Capitol Hill for 6 years. So to say that we need to now wait when we have a pattern of behavior from the FBI when it comes to Donald Trump trying to prevent him from becoming president, running through a special counsel investigation for years that came up with nothing that Democrats were accusing him of, and now we're expected to wait while the DOJ sits on this affidavit. And conveniently for them, they have the affidavit, so they can leak cherry-picked portions of that information that they will not release to the public into the press to try and create this narrative that they're on the right side of this. But you'll remember that this was also the argument made when it came to issuing a FISA warrant against Carter Page, and the argument was made that that was an unfair warrant, it should have been issued. Lo and behold, we get the information, and a federal judge has to come out and say that the warrant should have never been issued. So this idea that now we have to wait, even though we have this pattern of behavior, the FBI has completely destroyed trust here, and they've lost the benefit of the doubt, not just with Republicans, but with a number of the American people.
She's exactly right, Lynn Woolley, except I think it's worse. We have more than enough evidence, in fact, plenty of recent example to show that the FBI cannot be trusted. That FISA warrant that led to Russia was a FBI agent went to jail. Peter Strzok was fired. James Comey and Andrew McCabe lost their jobs by hook or crook. This is exactly the situation here. America knows a hit job when they see it, and they ain't believing it because they've got too much evidence.
Well, one question to you, and we'll take the break.
Okay.
Will they release the entire affidavit? Because Merrick Garland says he does not want it out.
I don't think they're going to. No way, shape, or form. Because what they're going to do, Lynn, as she says here, they're going to continue to leak. They've perfected the measure over the last 5 years. They're going to keep doing it because they can. That's why they're not going to release the affidavit.
Logically discussing the issues Austin cares about. Cardle and Woolley on Talk 1370. Join in 512-643-5483.
Harriet Hageman is a name that we should all remember. I mean, this has really given a shot in the arm to the MAGA movement. This landslide victory over Liz Cheney in Wyoming.
She is set to be by default, because Wyoming is 70% Republican in registration. She's going to be the next congresswoman from Wyoming, and she says that this is a indication of the mood that's sweeping the nation, Lynn Woolley, and I think she's spot on.
This all relates to the Mar-a-Lago raid and all the other things going on today with this judge, this I guess we should call him a magistrate.
And the Inflation Reduction Act that's not.
Well, all that's out there too. But look, if Trump were running against Joe Biden today, it'd be a landslide.
The polls show that. He's up by 6 points, 6 to 9 points. In the last month, I've seen two or three polls that say that. It hasn't gotten any news.
If you worship at the twin pillars here of abortion on demand and climate change, and you see everything now starting to go your way, except the Dobbs decision, of course, and you think, my goodness, we're making all this progress. We've got the Build Back Better Junior thing through.
They're misplaced.
We're going where we want to go. But what our problem is now is the midterm election and then the reelection of Joe Biden, which is probably not going to happen. So, Jim, they got to pull out all the stops right now if they're going to cling to power.
Yeah, you're right. They are pinning their hopes on, number one, this result in Kansas, where the voters there did not give the state legislature the ability to change the abortion laws. But that's a bit of a misnomer, because there's unique circumstances in Kansas that can explain why that happened and how it's not indicative of the rest of the country. Number one, most people are fed up with the climate change being a religion of the left, because they see inflation and crime in their streets and illegals at the border. Number two, and finally, this victory in Wyoming indicates that their biggest tactic and strategy, the whole January 6th, is a misnomer for the American public's focus. We do not care about it. There are greater concerns, mainly the kitchen room the kitchen table issues that we hear about every now and then. And so they're barking up the wrong tree in every one of their regards. It may keep their base together, but it ain't going to win any independent voters.
All right, a couple of things. I have a question for you. If somebody was running for president and said to you, I'm running for president because I want to put America first. Yeah. I'm running for president because I want to make the country great. I want to secure the border. I think the border's out of control. I want to get this inflation down. We'll do that by stopping spending money. We'll try to reduce the national debt just a little bit. Does that sound good?
Absolutely.
Or what about the other person on the other side that's saying, I'm running for president because I hate one certain individual? And I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah, that's a great way to
How is that a platform to run for the presidency of the United States of America?
Or I want to continue to kill babies that are viable in the womb. Or I want to continue to force you to pay higher gas prices. No, none of these things are winning issues.
Well, that's absolutely
exactly
right.
The point.
And that's the thing. Will the raid at Mar-a-Lago be more important to the midterms, because they're coming up 3 months or so? We're in the midterms. Is that going to be more for the Republican side to get the conservatives out to vote than the Dobbs decision on abortion is to get the left out to vote?
Absolutely. In both cases, and conversely, I think it's going to over-invigorate the red-blooded, God-fearing Americans in this country who are sick and tired of being sick and tired. We have seen them try to shove stuff down our throats through the classroom, through their policies on oil and gas, and through the court system because they can't pass it through legislative measures. It's all just totally not only not winning issues, they are in fact losing issues.
But here's the thing. I still have a great deal of faith in Republican Party's ability to screw things up. And I noticed Guy Benson in Town Hall, we've got about a minute here. I noticed Guy Benson in Town Hall has a column entitled, Is It Panic Time for Senate Republicans? Why would he write a column with that title, Jim?
Well, he's looking down, and this is a good point that we need to talk about. If you look at the candidates state by state by state in Arizona, in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, take Georgia. Is Raphael Warnock, a self-avowed socialist Democrat who the nation focused on down there, not to mention the Georgia, versus Herschel Walker, who's not your typical politician, and known for his football acumen, which type of candidate are you going to want? And it goes to your question, Lynn. Are you going to vote for somebody who's a bunch of negative Nelly, or are you going to vote for somebody that's defending the church and defending the American way of life? The same thing holds true in Ohio. So if you go state by state by state, there is reason to question some of these candidates. On the other hand, if you go state by state by state, like I've said, in Pennsylvania, Republicans by a 4-to-1 margin are seeing Democrats move to be Republicans as opposed to Republicans moving to be Democrats. There is a wave coming. You have to read the tea leaves to see
it.
I
think it's going to be, just to allude to radio, I think it's going to be a short wave. I don't think we're going to get that big, massive red wave, and I've said that from the start. You count chickens after the eggs are hatched, and
well,
Guy
course.
Benson is saying that. He says we are screwing up massively with regard to the Senate,
I think
he's absolutely right.
I don't know
that I think we'll take the Senate.
Time will tell.
Talk 1370, the right choice. Justin Dyer has arrived in the building, and we'll talk to him after these words.
Live, local, and taking your calls at 512-643-5483. It's Cardle and Woolley on Talk 1370.
Well, Jim Cardle and I recently had a chance to have lunch with Justin Dyer. Justin has recently been named the director of the Civitas Institute at UT Austin. You may know it as the Liberty Institute, and that name was taken so that they lost absolutely nothing in the transition here. But this is going to be an institute at UT that is, I think, sort of loosely based on the one at Stanford, the Hoover Institute. And tell us exactly what you hope to accomplish, Justin, because we're so glad to see something like this happening at UT.
Well, thanks for having me. We're excited about this project. We just very recently launched a website. It's civitas.utexas.edu, and you can read a little bit of our vision. You can sign up for an email newsletter that we'll send out. But what we hope to do is develop a very serious intellectually rigorous institute on campus focused on the foundations of a free society, and specifically looking at the ideas, the institutions, and the economy that makes a free society work and allows individuals to flourish. And around that, we'll work on recruiting faculty, developing curriculum for students, teaching courses, having public events and public engagement, and really building an intellectual community around those ideas at the University of Texas.
Now, how has your reception been since you've actually been in Austin, been on campus? And I'm not talking about so much with President Hartzell, but with maybe some of the basically liberal faculty. Are they now behind this?
You know, we'll find out. Classes start on Monday, and last year there was a lot of noise about this institute, about what it would be. There was a lot of coverage, and so it was a high-profile endeavor. My visit to campus last April went very well when I came to consider this position, and I had done my PhD at UT, graduated in 2009 from the government department, and had a lot of friends there and friends on campus across the political spectrum. And so I would say I've been treated very well, for the most part, by people on campus, and that there actually has been a lot of interest in what we're doing and a lot of support for what we're doing from not necessarily from people who are politically conservative or educationally focused on these areas, but people who just think that this is needed and this could be a really helpful thing for
campus.
Well,
but a university is a place where you're supposed to have a variety of opinion. Could I use the word diversity of opinion? And a university shouldn't be all left-wing or, for that matter, all right-wing. It seems like to me the idea at a university is to hash these things out and make people think.
That's right. And this institute is nonpartisan. We want to aspire to be what a university should be, which is a place where people with different opinions and views can come together, have conversations about important topics. And there is a kind of tradition that we want to conserve. And so to the extent that it's conservative, I think it's in this small C sense of conserving an intellectual tradition about constitutionalism, individual Amen. Rights, free markets, and enterprise, and bringing people together to have serious conversations about that. But it's not dogmatic. We don't begin with the answers, we begin with the questions. And when you begin with the answers, you're not doing education anymore. And so the focus really is on getting back to free inquiry, civility, debate, dialogue, trying to do that on campus the best we can. And I think there are a lot of people who want to be part of that and who are going to contribute to it.
You mentioned civility, something that we're lacking so much with the internet and the scatological nature of rushing to the gutter. But this phrase that you both mentioned, institution, the word is so overused now. You know, the government, we need to protect the institution of the White House. We need to protect the institution of Congress. We need to, what is this? I don't think a lot of Americans, they hear that word and they're kind of thinking, this is kind of, I don't get it. It's kind of amorphous. Define kind of
when I think about institutions, I'm thinking about those concrete political structures that our founders created in order to preserve the blessings of liberty.
Yes.
And those concrete political institutions are things like our legislature, the design of our legislature, our judiciary, the way that it works and operates, the executive branch, the way it's designed and what it's supposed to do, the system of federalism, the way that our states and the federal government mm-hmm. relate to each other, and the way at a local level people can participate in civil society. Those are the kinds of institutions I'm talking about. And to seriously study those institutions, why they exist, the way that they do, how they were designed, how they've operated over time, I think gives us the basis then to look in. And if we want to be critical, if we want to reform, if we want to do that, we can. But we need a solid basis to start first. And I think that's where our shared inquiry can come in and where we can be a part of this project together.
I love that. Folks, we're visiting with Justin Dyer, the new director of the Civitas Institute at UT. You mentioned you're going to be teaching classes. That, I think, will be news to a lot of folks. It's not just going to be a little think tank over there, as a lot of the allegations have been. But another institution that I see here, you taught actually 13 years at the University of Missouri, which is known for its journalism school. You've got some academic chops here. That's to be commended. Talk about your background.
Oh, thanks.
There.
When I left UT, did a PhD in the government department. I focused on public law and political theory and took up a faculty position at the University of Missouri. Shortly after starting there, I had a really unique opportunity to build an institute called the Kinder Institute on Constitutional Democracy. And our focus with that institute was on the foundations of American political thought and history. And we built a degree program for undergraduate students, a master's degree in Atlantic history and politics. and built a lot of coursework really focused on the American Revolution, the Constitutional Convention, the early Republic, giving students a good grounding in those topic areas, and then letting them from there branch out to different things, do internships, put it to practical use. But really our educational focus was on giving them really solid foundation for how things operate. And I remember at one point there was a student who said, we were doing interviews and students were talking about their experience. And one of the students said that the Institute had given her an appreciation, a newer appreciation for the United States, because it allowed her to see why things are the way they are.
Oh my gosh.
And I think that really captured a lot of what we want to do. We want to give people knowledge of why things are the way they are. And then I think from there, it's perfectly fine to be critical. It's good for us to take a critical stance.
And for them to think for themselves,
and people to think for themselves. But you have to understand before you can appreciate and love, and before you can lovingly criticize. And so I think that's what we need to do and what we need to be focused on in education.
One of the things that was just so trumpeted in the local media, certainly the print media and a certain online newspaper, is the fact that Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick had something to do with this. Have you met with the Lieutenant Governor since you've been back in town?
I have not. I have not met with the Lieutenant Governor. I know he was involved in the legislative efforts last year, and I was brought in after that process. And so the university was looking for somebody to lead the Institute, and I came to campus last spring and interviewed for that position and was interested in taking on the project. I believe in it, and I'm grateful for what the legislature had done. I think it's good for the university to have that kind of relationship with the state legislature.
What about Governor Abbott? Does he have anything to do with this, or is he standing behind it, or the legislature in any way?
You know, I don't actually know about the governor's office, if they've had a role in the background or not on this.
Because it's against the allegations or some of the— The black helicopter, we all think of ulterior motives, but right. You're saying there's apparently none. That's
well,
good.
You know, from my relationship to this has been through university leadership, and university was looking for somebody to run this institute. They were looking for somebody who was a serious academic, who had experience building institutes, and who wanted to be in Austin. And so I kind of checked all those boxes and was excited to come look at it, but it was not something planned out in advance. With political leaders of the state,
exactly.
Well, you know, if your former university, as Jim just said, is known for its journalism, the University of Texas has been known for some professors in the journalism department who focused on toxic masculinity, who focused on the tearing down of the system, our free market system, capitalism. This sounds like it could be a counterbalance to some things like that.
Well, I think that we have something to add of value to the university. That's why we exist. That's why people are excited about it. And I think you're exactly right that what we can add is a new voice to campus. I think we can try to bring people together for dialogue and debate. We can bring new visitors to campus. And we can mobilize some of the resources that are already there in a way. We can organize those resources in a helpful way. There are actually a lot of great things going on campus. And a lot of times people from the outside looking in don't necessarily see that because the things you see in the headlines are not the good things.
Well, that's true. Look, John Stossel had a column out late last week. We focused on it earlier in the week. And it was about
professions.
The phenomenon that Stossel said, tell me where you work and in what industry, and I will tell you your political point of view.
Yep.
Well, If somebody typically says, I'm a college professor, all right, that means you're generally a left winger at that point. You hate Donald Trump. You believe in CRT. You believe in the 1619 Project. You think Joe Biden's doing a fine job. Your favorite president of all time is probably Bill Clinton. So my question to you is, you're recruiting professors for the Civitas Institute, how do you word the ad to get the professors you want?
You know, that's a great question. It's something that we have to work through in terms of what this process will look like and who's all involved. And of course, we need to work with people across campus. And I'd say we're not going to ask who people voted for. You know, there's no political litmus test, but we do want people who are really on board with the educational mission of the Institute. And we have to find those people. And they do exist.
Well, I'm sorry.
But thinking about the political imbalance, back in the 1960s, it was about 2-1 liberals to conservatives on campus. Mm-hmm. And that number has changed over time. It's about 12-1 now, but in certain disciplines, it's about 33-1 in some of the latest polls. And so, you know, you might look and 3% of a certain discipline will be moderate or right of center. And that's a real challenge, I think, for the university. But precision point on that analysis that it's very different as you go from discipline to discipline, from college to college, from school to school. Certain disciplines lean heavily or more heavily than others. And so it's a big, diverse campus. There's 75,000 people on campus in any given day. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of different things going on in different places. And so it's hard to accurately paint it with one broad brush. And there are some good things going on, but it's definitely the political asymmetry is real and has been for a while.
There's been a phenomenon, especially at places like Berkeley, and I'm sure UT is in there as well. Ann Coulter, for example, is invited to speak on a campus, and she typically has to dodge tomatoes and eggs, and certainly not as bad as what Salman Rushdie had to deal with a little bit earlier. But my question to you is, will you bring in speakers, and will you bring in a variety of speakers, and will the student body acquiesce to having speakers on campus that they don't agree with?
You know, I sure hope so. We'll see what our experience is, but my goal is to bring in serious scholars who represent different points of view. Hopefully we can have some very good events where you have people from two different points of view who are going to talk about whatever topic it is and let the audience come away with a new understanding. And I hope the students will find that intriguing and exciting. And they'll always, there's a little controversy on campuses all the time with different speakers who come in, and we won't be immune from that. But I hope it's not, you know, nothing that prevents us from doing what we need to do and pursue the educational mission.
Well, I think that if we can get away from the one flavor university where everything is left wing and all thought is controlled, and if you're not left wing, that you get repudiated, I certainly hope we can bring that to the University of Texas. I will tell you, I take it on the chin on Facebook all the time from my Aggie friends who think that Texas A&M hung the moon and that it's the most conservative college this side of Hillsdale. And I don't know that that's true or not true, but I would like to have something that I can come back and say, look what we're doing at the University of Texas.
And that's the goal. And I'd say pay attention. If you want to sign up and learn more about the events that are coming, do that online. And we'll have a full slate of things here shortly to announce. And we're excited for the project and excited to get started at UT.
All right. Well, you got our number. You know where our studio is.
Yes.
And we're always here.
I appreciate it.
We'd love to have you on at any time.
Civitas.utexas.edu, folks.
And you can sign up for the newsletter.
Yeah, you can sign up there.
All right. Justin Dyer is the new director of the Civitas Institute at UT Austin. It's been a pleasure to have you here.
And, Jim, thank you.
And Godspeed and best of luck.
I appreciate that.
Talk 1370 is the right choice. It's Cardle and Woolley in the morning. We'll be back after these few words.
You know what? I think we're running out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and have you stop right there.
It's time for Cardle and Woolley's News to Know.
Come on, go.
Before you go.
Here we go again.
All right, News to Know before you go. We're going to have this hearing today, and I will be watching for that just very anxiously to see how that goes
Big
down.
Big time, yes.
But remember, this judge is not...
No, not a judge, a magistrate.
A magistrate, okay.
Yes, a little bit
different. No, I agree. This judge is not somebody I trust as far as I could throw him, and I don't know how much he weighs.
Well, you and a lot of other Americans, yes.
Interesting. What do you got?
I think that in this particular regard, the FBI, the Department of Justice, is not an organizations anymore that the American public trusts. It's unusual for an affidavit to be released, but there's nothing usual in this instance, and they're going to be painting themselves into a corner if they don't release something. I saw, Lynn, an article yesterday in Axios. It's entitled, "Will the Inflation Reduction Act Live Up to Its Name? Just 1 in 4 voters think so." It's a Morning Consult, is actually where I saw that. Morning Consult political survey finds that of all voters, 24% think that it will make inflation better. 23% say it will have no impact. 34% say it'll make it worse. So that's a grand total of 57 think it'll have no impact or make it worse, to 25 approximately think it'll... That's not a good result, Lynn, for Joe Biden's biggest legislative accomplishment, if that's what they're going to be selling going into the November election.
All right. The attorney for an Austin woman accused of murder has filed documents to try to suppress the evidence. We're talking about Caitlin Armstrong, accused of killing the cyclist Anna Mariah Wilson. Armstrong's attorney claims that evidence was obtained with an illegal arrest warrant and that they interrogated her improperly without Miranda rights. Mm-mm. And that'll put the plug in the jug for today. Be logical, everybody. And remember, you're either an insider
or you're not. I'm Jim Cardle. Have a great day.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.